He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Thursday, 11-6-25 edition of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst. The market's open mixed, and it's getting a little bit worse here as we go. The NASDAQ is down 229 points so far, which is about 1%, and that puts the NASDAQ at 23,725. The Dow is still hanging on to a little bit of a gain, however. The Dow, nope, not anymore. The Dow just went negative. There must be some news that just came out. I'm wondering if it's the Supreme Court decision. Check into that, Barry. The Dow's now down 314. That's 366 basis points. The S&P is down 41. The Russell 2000 is down 44 basis points right now. Let's check on the bond market, see how it is reacting. The 10-year right now is down 2 basis points to 4.10. Gold is up 0.25%. Oil is down a little bit. Oil down about 0.5%. And the battle over Bitcoin continues, and Bitcoin's losing the battle again today. It's down 820 points to 102.056. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a fee-based only nationwide registered investment advisory firm and financial planning firm. And there has to be some news. I have all the news right up until about 2 or 3 minutes ago, right?
Right. I don't see anything that's popped out specifically yet, but I mean, this overhang with the tariffs is pretty interesting. I've been doing a little thought in it, and it's like, you know, I feel like the market reaction is going to be would be completely different if, let's say, they said you can't do the tariffs, and we were in January of this year.
That's
right?
Good for the markets.
I feel like the market would have gone up then. Of course, now, fast forward 11 months down the road, right? It's if the Supreme Court says you can't do those, to me, the market reaction could be fairly negative.
Well, undoing it all.
It's just weird, like how the dynamic, right? Two different decisions would have two different reactions.
Well, right now the market sees something it doesn't like out there. Oh, it's not a big sell-off or panic or anything, but it is down a couple hundred points on the NASDAQ and down a couple hundred points on the Dow. You still don't have a solution to the government shutdown, which doesn't seem to be bothering most people. I mean, if you're flying, I guess it's a worry. Now it's looking like it could extend into Thanksgiving. Then neither side will back down. I mean, the Republicans do not want to extend the Obamacare benefits that were supposed to be for the COVID issue, to help out with folks at that period of time. And now, the Democrats want to keep those in place, and that seems to be the hang-up point there between the two sides, and neither side is budging. It's getting ugly, though. I mean, as it wears on, more and more people are not getting paid.
Well, you're going to have SNAP benefits are going to be, your EBT are going to be half of what it normally is, of course. The problem there is I was reading that some states aren't set up to do half benefits. They can only do full benefits.
So yeah.
They need like a computer upgrade or a software upgrade.
You got kind of a mess there. So, well, anyways, in the meantime, we focus on earnings. There have been a lot of earnings reports this morning. We're getting down into the second and third tier stocks right now, although there were several big ones that we'll talk about. And this has been a good earnings season so far. We'll have another update for you this Saturday. But as of last Saturday, 10.5% was the number growth in earnings over the same comparable quarter last year, which is pretty phenomenal, really. It's the valuation that is the issue and continues to be the issue. This fight over Bitcoin, I think's got the market a little bit unnerved. You know, a meltdown in Bitcoin could really infect the rest of the market. The chart on Bitcoin is not good. It's trading under its 200-day moving average. It can't quite win these battles. It rallies and then it sells off. They're selling into the rallies, and they're not buying the dips, only just a little bit. It did dip under 100,000, and there was some buying that came in to it. But right now it's fighting a pretty big battle between the bulls and the bears. And, of course, the way Bitcoin is set up, with, you know, in a way you could compare it to a pyramid scheme, all right? As long as people are buying and driving it up, everything is fine. But when you get a leak, a hole in the dike, and you start to get some panic selling, then you have an issue because there may not be that buying power to come in to offset that. So that's the issue that it's going through. When will we get a decision from the Supreme Court? I don't know. The Supreme Court started to hear arguments regarding the legality of the president's implementation of sweeping reciprocal tariffs on the prediction markets, Kalshi, which basically you can bet on almost anything. The odds of the court upholding the trade barriers have fallen sharply. On the tariffs, the Supreme Court heard arguments yesterday in the case against Donald Trump. How many times has he been taken to court? Use of tariffs under the International Emergency Economic Powers, which were previously ruled invalid by the lower courts. So the question is, will the Supreme Court agree with the lower courts? The question left a sense of key justices suggesting that the president may have overstepped his authority with his use of emergency powers. Now, I would think here's another possible outcome. If the tariffs are overruled using that act, I would think new tariffs would come in using a different justification, which I think the president does have the power to do that.
Well, and Bessent's mentioned that they have kind of a workaround. They don't really want to have to, I think he said they don't really want to have to go to that, but they do have a workaround, whatever that is.
Yeah. The bigger issue today seems to be the job cuts coming from the Challenger report. Somewhere I saw a headline that it's the most job cuts we've had in 22 years. But I got to believe a lot of that's maybe in this government shutdown going on right now. Year-to-date, U.S. job cuts top 1 million, exceeding 2024's full-year total. Well, the year's almost over, and we're ahead of 2024, so I wouldn't say that's the end of the world. But I think the
and
Fed...
There weren't a lot of cuts in 2024
no.
either. By the way,
I think the Fed should weigh the jobs market and give that more weight right now than inflation because I think it's a bigger problem.
Yeah, and that's a story we've been hearing. You know, we've been hearing that from a couple of the Fed members. I think you mentioned, didn't you mention Bowman?
Yes.
I think
said that exact same thing, right?
Right, exactly.
That we should be giving more weight to the jobs market than to the inflation, which is at 3% somewhere in there. When asked what factors were responsible for the job cut, many employers replied DOGE impact. It was cited for 209. Well, you know what? That was kind of the purpose of DOGE, right?
And contractors. I mean, you got to remember, too, you got a lot of, you know, when we think of the government budget, a lot of times you see the regular government payrolls. And I mean, there's lots of government contractors out there, too. And those, you know, obviously those are, you know, kind of the trickle down, you know, system, right, in terms of, you know, cuts at the Fed, right? Eventually we'll make it. down to some of the contractors. So that's probably some of that, I would imagine.
Well, 293,000 are the federal contractor workforces.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And only 21,000 were attributed, and then another 20,000 downstream from that, due to a loss of federal funding to private and non-private entities. Well, they just cleaned up a lot of leaks to me in the dike of money that's been going out over the years and continues to leak out, and they shorted up a little bit, and of course, that's going to have some ripples through the economy. Hopes for a swift shutdown deal fade despite looming Thanksgiving travel fears. The odds of a U.S. shutdown lasting to Thanksgiving are now at 24% going right up to Thanksgiving. It's the longest on record now. We'll be right back.
City of New Orleans, I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, once in a while you get into a bidding war for a buyout of a company. This Metsera has been pretty interesting to watch. It is a weight loss drug startup. And Novo Nordisk, I don't know why they would be coming in and putting in a bid for it, but they're hot on their tail to buy this thing. Now you've got Pfizer, who has nothing in their pipeline whatsoever. I mean, Pfizer, the only thing Pfizer has to offer is a 7% dividend yield. But the problem is the capital, the price of the stock continues to melt. And that more than erodes that dividend yield. And it sounds like Pfizer, they don't have anything in their own pipeline, so they matched Novo Nordisk bid for this obesity biotech, MTSR, and they seem determined to get it, and then they can become a player. And I don't know what Novo Nordisk, there must be something novel about what Metsera has versus the other two. But anyways, Pfizer trying to get in on the weight loss segment of the drug sector. While in the meantime, you know, Lilly's got the blockbuster Zepbound, which seems to be the king right now, and Lilly's on its way to becoming the first trillion-dollar pharmaceutical, which I predicted in my article that I wrote on Lilly quite some time ago. Probably time to freshen up an article there on Lilly. After they had that big blowout report here recently. But I just think the fact that these two companies are bidding bidding war over this startup shows you how big the opportunity, the market is for weight loss. And I saw another company that has been disrupted, Weight Watchers, WW, is getting clobbered again. And, you know, totally disrupted, and it brings up the point that you want to own the disruptors and you don't want to own the disrupted. The other thing that I find interesting, in the year 2000, if anybody even mentioned that they were going to become a dot-com company and start selling things online, that's when the animal spirits and the gold rush was on, thinking that, boy, it's all you got to do is open a website and all of a sudden your sales are going to double, triple, quadruple, your overhead's going to go way down, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that didn't work out for many companies, only a few really. But if you mentioned it, boom, up went the stock. Now, if you mention AI, or use the words NVIDIA or Palantir in the same breath, up goes the stock. And I see that this morning here, STGW, which is Stagwell, which has been a pretty stagnant stock over the years. But They are teaming up with Palantir for a digital ad selling platform, which is interesting. Okay, this is something to look into. I remember the Trade Desk was one of the great stocks of all time when they started brokering extra digital ad units that they had, right? And they actually had a bidding marketplace. They still do. Where you can buy ads on some of the biggest websites out there in the world, which is not cheap to do. But Stagwell, STGW, is up 33% today. It's in New York, which is kind of the advertising capital of the world with Madison Avenue. And that's all they had to do was announce a partnership with Palantir, and up goes the stock. The new partnership is going to build a groundbreaking industry-first AI and data platform that offers clients a fast path to a central source of marketing and advertising targeting information that locks unlimited new return on investment for corporate marketers, the company says. Well, we'll see. Okay, the bond market right now, which was upset definitely by the comments from our friends at the Fed last week. We had rates under 4%, doggone it. Did a lot of work to get them down to 3.99. And then Powell opens his mouth and says, I don't think there's going to be a December rate cut. And that's not a foregone conclusion. Far from it, is what he said. And up went interest rates, down went the bond market. The chill came in. It was like throwing a bucket of ice on the stock market. Right. And the further reaches of the stock market basically froze up, and everything just came to a screeching halt by just, you know, one sentence, really, out of the Fed's mouth. But I continue to watch. We continue to shop. We still have people that are in our individual bond fund. Which we believe in holding individual bonds as opposed to owning bond funds. And I pointed out many times how poorly the bond funds have performed over the years. You can look that up in the app. You can look up AGG, which is the Aggregate Bond Index. You can look up Vanguard's Bond Index, which is BND, and look at the 10-year, 5-year, 3-year performance on those bond funds. And what's even worse yet, I can't even imagine how much money, retirement money, is parked in those bond funds because of this asset allocation equation that says your age.
And folks may not even know it. Folks may not even know it when they buy these target
bonds. No, they don't even know it. It sounds good. I see the ads for Vanguard, and they've got about 100 people sitting behind computers looking at charts and whatnot, and this is their bond department. And this runs their bond funds. And, of course, the last big bond rally, Bill Gross got out about the right time. Because he knew that going from 17% in the late 70s down to 1%, there would never be another bond run like that. And, of course, PIMCO Income Fund became the biggest fund at that time.
PIMCO Total Return.
Yes, yeah, PIMCO Total Return. And he was a rock star, which you don't usually see in the pretty kind of
bond world.
Yeah, it's not like, oh, I made 4% on this bond this year. It's not like I made 98% on this stock. But anyways, so I see Cypher Mining, which is now going to power, it was a Bitcoin miner. Now they're going to power data centers. That's pretty low grade, pretty low quality. They're floating a bond offering at 7 1/8. Normally, I think that would be about 10 or 11%. It's going to be a private offering. So this is the kind of thing that's going to show up in that private debt, the private debt markets. And meanwhile, a decent company like Mattel, 5%. That's the bond world right now, 5%, okay? Anything over that, like Mattel's not exactly a blue-chip stock, but it's all you're getting is 5% right now. So the pickings are very thin. We'll be right back.
Well, the top brass don't like him talking so much, and he won't play what they say to play.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
And welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, I got a couple of stories to tell here in the second half. One on Robinhood and the other one on DoorDash, along with a few others that have reported earnings here today. My first story is going to be on Robinhood, which reported earnings last night, and it is down 8% right now. And but having said that, this has been one of the biggest winners in the market. I think it has a little bit of meme fervor, Barry, like GameStop had, like AMC Entertainment had, and some of the others that the meme players have picked up on and ran them to the moon, right? And then once they start to back out, because the valuation is extreme on Robinhood at the current time. What did Robinhood do that was different from Schwab, different from others in that business, right? Morgan Stanley, etc. They really brought trading to the iPhone. Is that a fair statement to make?
Yeah, I think tech from a technology standpoint, right? They made it, they made it look sleek and look, not look clunky like a lot of your, very large, a lot of your large institutions out there, large custodians. They haven't had to invest in technology, and so yeah, Robinhood, got to start with a fresh platform. Was able to build a sleek model. They also were able to capitalize on
crypto,
Bitcoin, right?
Yep.
Crypto, and also were in the right place for during COVID, right?
So now you got kids sitting on the couch, right, that don't need a job because they're watching their crypto go up on their Robinhood app on their iPhone, and they can sit on the couch all day and order sushi on DoorDash, right? Okay. Well,
they didn't order as much sushi on DoorDash this last quarter, but
I'm hearing that it's the job market's getting a little tougher out there, especially in the tech area. AI's definitely creating an impact there.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't had any job numbers for a while now, but I do. I mean, I remember one of the last job reports I saw was, folks coming out of college have been, having the hardest time finding a job since, in any time frame that wasn't a recession.
Yeah, and like veterans in the industry that have been around and have a lot of job experience, I mean, they're going through a tough set of interviews before they select so jobs are getting harder and harder to come by.
Coding productivity has gone up in coding. One of my sons who his buddy that plays with him, his dad does coding, and he was talking about just in that industry as a whole, how quickly code can be written and things can be written now, already compared to, how it used to be in that industry.
So. Yep, 100%. Okay, now, we had a big position in Robinhood in our ultra growth portfolio. And if you look at the app, okay, over the last 3 years, Robinhood stock has averaged gain of 126% per year. I mean, probably if I looked at over the last 3 years, this is right up there. That is one of the screens in the app. You can look at what the best 1 year performer, best 1 month performer, best 10 year performer, best 5 year performer, etc. And I got to believe that over the last 12 months, if you go back a year ago today, Robinhood is up 485%. So you can imagine where the multiples are, extreme right now. So our story on Robinhood is we bought, I think we originally bought a 5% position in Robinhood in the portfolio. That was back, or maybe 4%, 4 or 5%. It became 15%
right.
of our overall portfolio, which makes my left
spot.
Eye yeah. start to twitch.
Yeah.
And my wife will say, honey, why is your left eye twitching? Because
Robinhood's
15% of our ultra growth portfolio, and the Padres are playing the Dodgers tonight, those two things. But anyways, I don't feel comfortable as a fiduciary having 15. Now, Burry, Michael Burry, has 100% of his hedge fund short Palantir and short NVIDIA. Now, that's about as far out on the limb as you can get. Okay, I get nervous with 15%. So what did I? First, I sold a third of it and cut it to 10%. Why? It was still going pretty strong, but the valuation was just starting to get into nosebleed territory. So I made three sells. I first sold it back in late September for a 211% gain. Now, that's a short-term gain, I know. If you got an IRA, you don't have to worry. If you were in Robinhood with us, when you see your accountant this January, February, March, whatever, you say, did you know you had a 211% gain in Robinhood? You tripled your money in that investment. You're going to owe some short-term capital gains taxes, but what are you going to do? It's the prudent thing to do, okay? So there it goes. Now we're down to a 10% position. Then it kept going higher and higher. And on October the 16th, I sold another half of that to bring it down to a 5% position. And that came out at a gain of 238%. Okay, you got another short-term capital gain to report to Mr. Taxman on that portion of your shares, right? And then I finally washed out the entire position on October the 24th, which is just 2 weeks ago, because when both eyes start to twitch, I know it's time. The valuation. Okay, where is the valuation right now? And we were starting.
It came down because the stock price has come down.
Yeah, it's down 8%. But still, I mean, you have right now, looking at the Best Stocks Now app, I don't know that there's a more expensive stock out there. The P.E. ratio is 69. The forward P.E. ratio is 66. And remember, this is a financial. This isn't a technology stock, although some would try to, it's certainly trading at technology stock type multiples. It's trading at a price to sales of 35, price to cash flow of 142. That's the one that really gets me nervous. And the valuation on it is just like extreme. And, you know, when I started to see the market begin to wobble 3 or 4 weeks ago and the outer hinterlands of the market start to be reined in a little bit, we got out of it entirely. And that third sale of Robinhood was once again for a big gain. I want to say, let's see, the third sale, which went out the door, 220%. So we made three sales of it. To bring our position from 15% down to zero. And I just did not feel comfortable owning it up at that level. So that's just, this is a little bit of a lesson. Other people would say, let your winners run. Well, you know what? I mean, I'm managing money for other people. I might do that in my own account. But for people that are planning to retire someday or in retirement, I have to be a little bit more prudent than that. And
you
when
want
to it gets
take the
to
win
be,
at a certain time, you want to take the win. I mean, you know, that's
yes.
a name, like you said, with the valuation that if there is, you know, it is a pullback. It's one of those names that's going to get, you know, going to get hit a good bit pretty quickly. And, you know, obviously today, you know, I think what, you know, given the earnings, given some earnings info, I mean, it's down 8% today. And that's not, it's not necessarily what you envisioned from when you were getting out of the position. But, you know, I love how you go through the whole thought process in terms of, okay, entry point, right? Bought this, trimmed it here, you know, trimmed it here again just because of the size of the position. And then, of course, exiting completely given given where we are market-wise and valuation-wise.
I just feel like at that point the risk-to-reward ratio is better owning cash than hanging on to Robinhood at the kind of multiples. Now my second story is I had a guy on Seeking Alpha who is one of my subscribers last night as I was eating dinner. I saw the news cross that DoorDash was getting clobbered in the after hours. When we come back, I'll give you the rest of the story. We'll be right back. Back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Now, I don't know, when you took the chartered technician course, is there anything in there about selling? This is a sell sign, or this is a warning sign, or is it more just analysis of the chart, Barry?
Yeah, no. It'll tell you in terms of in terms of different chart formations. You know, what a potential, right, of course, you know, what the potential, you know, profit could be from that particular formation. What the downside, right, how much should you let that, you know, how long should you let that chart form in terms of downside protection, right? You know, and so it has some pretty good trading rules. I think the key with most technical analysis, and you do this, we do this across fundamental and technical analysis, is, you know, not just focusing on one indicator, right? It's like, you know, you need a few different indicators. They're all confirming, right? Well, then that gives you more conviction in, you know, what you're
doing.
Yes.
Well, okay, so in late October, with about 40 minutes to go in the market, we own Chipotle in our value portfolio, and I unloaded it because I didn't like the way the chart was trading. I guess I'll make a little workbook someday of maybe 10 different charts that I consider like the kiss of death. You know, it's not always true, but 90%, 80% of the time I look at it. And if the story is weak also, which also backs up what you're saying, there's no one thing. There is no one thing that says, I didn't like the Chipotle story with inflation, and I just did not feel good that they were going to give a good report. And the chart was confirming that. Okay, so I had a guy write to me on October 3rd. He says, Bill, question, why did you sell CMG, which is Chipotle, based on chart and your intuition? He said, you did the same thing with Astera Labs, which I also sold right at about the right time. And I wrote back kind of jokingly, well, I used the chart, my intuition, and my crystal ball. And okay, so he thought, all right, well, I didn't learn much from that. But I don't know what else to say. But I also, you know, I think I said in there that there were also reasons. Now, on November the 3rd, that's 3 days ago, here's his latest comment to me as I'm sitting there eating dinner last night. He says, Bill, what perfect timing to sell DoorDash. It's down 17% after their results. Again, please tell, besides the chart, intuition, and your crystal ball, now he's asking for more. Why did you sell Please? And that's what I did is I resent him the alert that I sent out on November the 3rd. Selling all of my DoorDash out of the Ultra Growth portfolio for a 46% short-term gain. Now, here you go. Here's the short-term gain controversy and issue. I felt like it was better to take a 46% short-term gain and pay the taxes on it than to lose that gain. Okay, then you wouldn't have to pay the taxes. But you also wouldn't have kept two-thirds of the profit.
Right.
And then I said, I'm also selling it out of my premier growth portfolio. The company will report earnings later this week. I do not like the way that it is trading. And I could show you what the chart looked like on that day. Okay.
Right.
But I had another reason. I don't like the way, like the fact that Amazon signed a big deal with Grubhub for food delivery. It will be hard to compete with Amazon. And so I thought that was a game changer, that Amazon goes in and we're going to get in a... How many companies has Amazon crushed and put out of business over the years? That seems to be... He seems to revel in that, Jeff Bezos. He says, your profit margin is my opportunity. I'm happy to make 1% profit or a tenth of a percent while you're making 4 or 5. I'm going to squeeze you, buddy, which is really antitrust type of behavior, predatory behavior on his part, but he gets away with it. And I kind of felt like maybe DoorDash, that's not good to have him come in and make a deal with Grubhub. And I think it's $20 a month. You can subscribe for $20 a month and have unlimited deliveries to your door, just like he does with the Amazon model. So I had two reasons to sell that thing. And I did. We had a pretty big position in it, too. It wasn't a small position. And I'm seeing right now, I haven't looked at it lately. It has recovered. It's not down 15. It was down 20%. Oh, no, it's down 15.4%. And I see the kiss of death right there in the chart. It's a support line that I had drawn, and it's a violation of that support line on the downside. That your antenna should go up big time when that happens. And maybe I'll put that in. Maybe I'll put a couple examples in the newsletter this week. And you know what? I just, when I see those charts, I've seen too many that have done that, well, and then that proceed to cascade to the downside after that.
In identifying a bad chart is probably more beneficial than actually identifying a good chart.
Well, and a good chart is just turn it upside down, really,
right,
in a mirror
almost,
image.
Yeah,
it's really a chart that's going sideways, and you've drawn a ceiling, and it quite can't get through that ceiling, and it keeps trying. Then all of a sudden it punches through that ceiling. Turn that upside down in a chart that keeps hitting resistance, and then rebounding, hitting support, rebounding, hitting support, and then finally violating that support. Okay, now that crew of buyers that was in there at that 220 level that always came in and bought it and brought it back up and held that support line, all of a sudden they've disappeared. And now you don't know where the next level of support is. But at the end of the day, DoorDash, in my book, has always been vulnerable. Because it's a low profit margin kind of business. And it doesn't make a lot of economic sense. By the time you get your Subway sandwich delivered to your door, mm-hmm. you're paying $22 for a Subway sandwich, which isn't very competitive in the marketplace unless you can afford that. Or your time is worth it to not have to go over and drive to Subway. So anyways, those are my two stories to end the show. Now you know the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey used to say. To set up an appointment with us, we'd love to talk with you. 855-611-BEST, 855-611-BEST. To get 4 free weeks to, the live alerts, the portfolios, the app, the whole enchilada, you can go to GundersonCapital.com. That's GundersonCapital.com. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.